This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
We are broadcasting live from Kingside Diner. If you get a chance, come on by. We're just overlooking Shaw Park. The food is coming out. They have a hot, gooey butter that is just insane. Martin, you've brought your lovely mother here today, and she's having some food with us.
Now, you could look at this a couple of different ways. Either Martin is a great son, spending quality time with Mom, or I got out of buying her lunch because Frank is serving up the food here at Kingside Diner.
I'm going the ladder.
You're going to go with the ladder.
That's right.
Somehow I knew that.
Yes. We're joined by Dan Connolly, and who better to talk to before Super Bowl 53 than the man who won a Super Bowl ring with the Patriots and used to block for Tom Brady. What a story for Dan. Not drafted, went to Marquette High School, Southeast Missouri State, moved around in the league, and then found a home and had an unbelievable career with the Patriots. Dan, great to be with you. How are you?
Good, Frank. Thanks for having me.
So where does an expatriate watch the Super Bowl? Do you do it at a party setting, or are you kind of locked in alone in your basement watching
this thing? Well, expatriate makes it sound like you're getting kicked out of the country, doesn't
right.
it?
Right. Yes, it does. Yes, to answer your question, I am going to be watching it at home. I'm not locking myself away to, watch it privately. I want to be able to watch the game, So going to a party, you don't really get to watch it too closely. So I'm going to watch it at home with my kids.
You'll be at work, right?
Watching. We'll be at work.
And is there an area where you don't have to – I mean, normally we watch all our sporting events on 8-inch screens while we're editing. Can you get away a little bit to a –
And I'll be honest, because I'll be working on the show that night. We'll have it on. We'll have the audio up full of Jim Nantz and Tony Romo. We have one screen that's a little bigger than the small monitors. On a typical night, you've got like 8 games going. So I'll watch it, but I probably won't be glued to the set. I mean, I'll probably be waiting to see if they do a Kroenke cutaway and what is said about the Rams' glorious return to L.A. But I'm fine with the typical sports office setup.
How about the fact that for most of your life when you've come back here to St. Louis, everybody's kind of rooting against your team? We didn't like the Patriots. And now, in February, everybody's a Patriot fan in St. Louis.
Yeah, are they? I was
I think it's 80-20.
Sure. Okay.
No, I think it's shifted. I've even said in recent years, Rams fans who were bitter or disenchanted, you should bond with the Patriots because their fan base can't stand Goodell. They hate the league. And I said, if you feel that way in St. Louis, this is the franchise you actually should be bonding with.
Yeah, no,
lovable Bill Belichick.
I completely agree with you. That's great, and I love hearing that St. Louis fans finally are changing their tune.
Now, granted, it took the devil to put us on your side,
totally.
But we are on your side. Now, I was with Grant Williams yesterday, and he brought this out, and it continues the theme that he was a part of and that you were a part of. The Patriots' offensive line never high draft choices. Across the front, I don't think there's anybody lower than a 3, and there's 5s and there's older guys. I mean, how does that happen? It must be the greatest offensive line coach of all time.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. I think there were a couple first-rounders in there, but
When you played?
When I played.
Okay, now it's 3 and above.
Yeah, so there was Logan Mankins and Nate Solder, I think, were both first-rounders, but you're right. The majority of the guys are either undrafted or late-round picks, guys that they can get young or early in their career and really develop them. And Dante Scarnecchia does an amazing job. He did that with me, and I'm not going to say that I was anything special, but what he got me to become in my career with the Patriots was night and day difference.
I didn't realize, and we talk every time, poor Dan Connolly, it's like, hey, what you like with Brady and Belichick? And we'll get to that. But the one thing I didn't know was his obsession with quizzing players about U.S. holidays and about teammates. Like, you had to know something. If Bill Belichick stopped in the field, he'd quiz you. Did you ever get caught and say, well, he seems like a nice guy?
Yeah, usually I was pretty prepared. I mean, there was a lot of stressful Tuesday nights trying to think of what's Bill going to ask us. He really picked on the rookies, though. And when the rookies would be in camp, in their rookie camp, he would quiz them on all the players of the team. So they would have to come in after being drafted or after signing as free agents. They would come in, and day one, they needed to know the roster. And he would put pictures up on the big screen and say, who's this guy? And they would have to know it. And then he always had some fun around Memorial Day and Labor Day, just quizzing the guys, what is this holiday about? You know, and most of the guys would say, like, oh, you know, get together and have a barbecue. But he would – he's a big military guy, Navy guy.
Did he tattoo them when they were wrong, or did he politely correct them?
Yeah, he would politely correct them, kind of humiliate them a little bit, just, you know, have a little laugh. It wasn't too serious.
How about personal rapport and relationship with him? Grant said that he would always razz him because he knew that Grant had three little girls at home, and he'd say, boy, I bet you're happy to come to work every day.
Yeah.
What would he say to you?
You know, he would just – I guess my kids were still pretty young, so there was never anything like that. But, you know, he just always expected so much out of all of us. You know, I mean, you would come, and it was strictly business when you walked in the door. You just put everything else that's in your life aside. He had a saying, put it in the drawer. So, like, when we'd get together in the end of July, he'd say, take everything else that you're dealing with in the off season, family, all those other issues, put it in the drawer, close it, lock it. We'll deal with it in February.
Wow.
And we hear these stories. If Tom Brady gets touched, you guys or running backs, tight ends, whoever missed the block or whatever, would be lambasted. Is there? I mean, every team wants to keep their quarterback upright. I get that. Is there just something different up there about you don't mess with the franchise when it's Brady? And if you ever let a guy pass you, you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's,
you know,
on me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's not completely on, you know, oh, the coach is going to yell at me. I mean, I take pride in my job, and that's my one job, you know. I always loved how Belichick could simplify what we do. With receivers, he would tell them, you got two jobs, get open and catch the ball. With linemen, it's even simpler than that. All you got to do is protect the quarterback. There's so much more to it, but that's your job, protect the quarterback. So we would take a lot of pride in not letting that guy get hit. And, of course, for who he is, what he means to the team, to the organization, you take a little bit more pride in that.
I think I've asked you this before, but present-wise, he was a pretty good gift giver, Tom Brady. Give us an idea of some of the things you may have gotten from him at the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a lot of different things. The ones that always stood out, he gave us some custom-made Tom Ford boots, which I just always thought was kind of funny. I mean, they're nice boots. But the group that he was giving it to, a bunch of, you know, 6'4", 6'5", 320-pound
men. Not fashion plates, are you
not
saying?
Not in the designer boots. Huh?
We had, like, you know, $5,000 pair of shoes on it, like a $50 suit, you know.
Right.
Yeah. For people who don't know, it's Tom Ford, the designer, he has sunglasses that cost $500.
And so if I'm Dan Connolly, I'd say, God, this is so nice, thank you. And then I go home, honey, we could put these on eBay.
Yeah.
And not only what they're worth, but say they came from Tom Brady and I can double the price.
Yeah. Or, Tom, do you have a receipt for this? I didn't see it in the
– I'm not sure these quite
fit. Will you sign
this? Yeah. What did you think of the Patriots? Because you were on the practice squad in Jacksonville, right? Was that what it was before you got to
– In Jacksonville, I was active for my rookie year. I played a little bit down there, and then my second year was on the injured reserve.
Okay, and then New England's interested – I'm sure in the league you have an idea of what Belichick, Brady, that franchise is like. What was the perception before you got there?
I mean, so I grew up here, obviously, and got to see the fall of the Rams to the Patriots. And I was never too bitter about it. I appreciated what the Patriots were able to do. So I, in a way, kind of idolized a lot of those guys. I mean, a lot of those big names that made those big plays in the Super Bowl and following Super Bowls, we're still in that locker room. So I walked in, and I was a little bit starstruck. But day one, I got to meet some of those guys, Teddy Bruschi, Mike Vrabel, Tom, and they were just normal people and came up and just introduced themselves to me, welcomed me to the team. And so very quickly I realized that these aren't necessarily big shots. These are just – they're just football players. They're welcoming me to the team, to the family. And I fit in pretty quickly.
When you watch offensive line play, either like growing up or now, who's the most perfect offensive lineman you ever saw? That this guy just never got beat. He was just perfect. Who would it be? Who jumps out at you?
Alan Faneca was the guy growing up that I loved to watch. He was just tough, gritty, and his technique was great.
Did you see much of Pace? Do you remember watching him at all? It seemed like nobody ever beat him either.
Yeah, Pace. Jonathan Ogden, I mean, those guys, just the size that those men were and the way that they could move so fluidly and just dominate people was amazing to watch.
And then what linemen did you just not want to deal with? And not did
D-lineman.
You give them a – yeah.
So the one guy that always caused me the most trouble was Kyle Williams in Buffalo. And he was just like, you know, just tough, physical, not a huge guy. He was undersized, but he was strong. But he had a motor like none other, and he would not stop. I mean, I could do whatever I could to try to stop him, hit him with my hands. He would find a way to spin, get off me, and just not stop.
You know, I've been watching a lot of the coverage this week, and it's amazing from a media standpoint how much time there is to fill where they'll debate who's the MVP going to be, and then the next night, what's the best matchup? I'm wondering, as players, how much work was done before you got there? In the Super Bowl week itself, is it kind of light lifting for you guys? I mean, because how much can you do at that point? It just seems like it's a big party.
Well, wait a minute. They got to tape the walkthroughs of the other team.
Oh, no. Here we go.
That's on Saturdays. But is it all work is done before you get on that plane?
Yeah.
And then once you get there, there's not a lot. I mean, what do you do Super Bowl week?
Pretty much. You know, that bye week is crucial. You know, we'll do the entire game plan. Obviously, you know who you're playing. So you put everything in. You treat that week at home like it's a regular work week, and you get as much done as you can. Film study, whole game plan is in before you leave town. Once you get to wherever you're playing, you know, you have a couple days of practice. And what we always would try to do is we would try to get everything done before Friday, because that's when family would arrive. And then once family arrived, it's just enjoy the time before the game. So Wednesday and Thursday, I mean, between the media days and just – everything else that's surrounding the Super Bowl, you're very, very limited on time. So you just got to make the best of the time.
And you won the year. It was the Seattle game, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one where Russell Wilson is the late pick. What's your reaction? Because I'm thinking on the sideline at that point, you got to be thinking, well, we're probably going to lose. I mean, you have to be thinking that, don't you? And then the reaction once it changes.
Yeah, I mean, I did know that we had Tom Brady still. So and there was enough time on the clock, and we had been in games like that before where the offense was ready to go out and run a 2-minute drive, you know. So, we assumed that Seattle was going to score and we were just going to have to take the field. But, I mean, that was just the greatest ending that we could have asked for there.
What was the nastiest Brady's been to you in a situation where you may have given up a sack? Maybe it was the Waiters.
You know, I don't know if he ever would yell at me or anybody for giving up a sack. It was more just like, as a team, like he would on the sideline, he would come to our group and just scream his head off at us, just to try to motivate us. I mean, we typically didn't need that, you know. I mean, some guys might have, but we knew what job we had to do. Like I said before, I mean, we took a lot of pride in what we did, and so we knew if we got beat, we knew what we had to do to fix it. We had our coach Scarnecchia, who I was talking about, he was yelling at us, so. Anything Tom was going to say was not really going to motivate us any more than we already were.
Dan Connolly with us, Martin and Frank live at Kingside Diner. It's the Clayton location, beautiful spot here right at the corner of Brentwood and Bonham. Come on by. We're going to be here until 1 o'clock. Andy McCollum. It's our big offensive lineman day today.
Yes.
We're going Rams with Andy McCollum in the 12 o'clock hour. Also, Ricky Prohl is going to check in. He's in Atlanta with that Rams base. So this particular Super Bowl, it's the ninth for Brady Belichick. But Tom Brady has somehow convinced himself, I think, they're the underdogs. Nobody believes in us. This has been hard for me to buy into because the Patriots are a dynasty, and yet Tom has really been pushing this. We're still here. You thought we were dead. Do you think he really believes that, or does he find a thing to grab onto for motivation?
I think he believes it. I mean, this is not the same team that was in the Super Bowl last year. You know, I mean, there's certain guys that are gone. There's certain guys that are new. I mean, there's new coaches. You start from scratch every year. So for this team to get to where they are now, it wasn't given. You know, just because of what they did last year doesn't mean that's what's going to happen this year. So they had to start over just like everyone else. And so, you know, I think that team hears all the negativity that comes out in the media or just what people are saying about them. And yeah, I'm sure a lot of that is used as motivation.
So he believes that. That's interesting because I just thought maybe he was trying to sell the team on that. Come on, we're underdogs. But maybe he's kind of pissed because everybody says this guy's done, or Stephen A. says he's about the fifth best quarterback in the playoffs. It must work for him that he just gets himself fired up.
Yeah, I think he's got to take it personally. I mean, he's working just as hard, if not harder, than everybody else out there. So, I think you're – no matter who you are, if you hear that kind of stuff, you're going to take it personally.
So in terms of the actual game at 5:30 on Sunday, what do you think happens? I mean, does Edelman catch 15 balls? Is it James White's time to shine? Does Gronk go out or they try to run it with Michelle? I mean, how do you think the Patriots will handle this offensively?
I just think the way that they always do. They're gonna start the game probably trying to run the ball and just try to stay ahead on downs and play their kind of game. They don't want to have to just throw the ball the entire game and get into long yarded situations. So I think the running game is going to start out.
Does he say anything that's particularly motivational before a Super Bowl? I mean, we were all familiar with these great historic sports speeches like Herb Brooks before the Miracle on Ice. What is he – and is he that flat and monotone before the biggest game of all?
No, but, you know, I think everybody's approach, at least in my experience with that team, everyone's approach to that game is no different than any other game. And that's not to say that it's minimized at all. That's just to say that every game is so important because of what every game means. And that game is the most important because it's the last game and it's the biggest game of the year. But you have to approach it the exact same way in your preparation and what you say. And so
emotionally, there's no difference between that game and Week 10 against the Buffalo Bills.
I don't know if you can say there's no difference, but in terms of preparation, you have to prepare the same way. Everybody knows what's at stake. But nobody's going to change how they approach the game or how they're going to play the game, if that makes sense.
No.
We've talked a lot this week about a certain owner for the team playing the Patriots, and then you have Bob Kraft on the other side, who was very pro-St. Louis through a lot of the talks and the relocation. And even when they won the AFC title game, they handed him the Lamar Hunt Trophy, and he said, I'd like to say something about Mr. Hunt, who is the Chiefs' longtime owner, and he said, nobody treated me better when I came into the league. I just thought it was a really classy moment because he said, I know the Chiefs fans are hurting right now. What was your experience? How much is Bob Kraft around? We see him a lot, but was he coming to practices and hanging in the locker room?
Every day. Yeah, and I didn't mention him before, but he was one of those people that I met. And it may not have been day one, but it was week one of me first getting there. He came up to me, shook my hand, asked me, my name Connolly in Boston is, there's about 1,000 of them in the phone book. He asked me if I had any roots in Boston. We just had a nice little conversation. So, yeah, he was around every day, made a point to know everybody and really, really bring each person into his family.
What was your Super Bowl check, and how does it arrive? Does it come a month later, or does it automatically put into your bank? And what's that like all of a sudden? Oh, boy, I just got this. Well, how do you remember that? What was it?
The amount? I don't remember the amount. I mean, it was
200 or 300 usually, isn't it?
In
that range?
You know, because you don't get paid for the playoffs until the end. So it was, you know, we had a bye week, so that was two games and then Super Bowl that we got paid for. And then whatever you get paid more if you win. And so I think it all came at once. And I want to say, yeah, maybe around 200. It just arrived in my bank account one day after.
Imagine Frank just go online and say, oh, the 200,000 just went through.
Now, do you mention that to your wife or does she
No,
honey, the 100 just came through.
That's bonus money. That's what we earned. That's not part of the contract. So.
Your agent was Rocky, right?
Yeah.
Well, that must have been a fun experience. You dealt with him your whole career?
No. Well, so I had an agent.
Rocky Arsenault or St. Louisan?
Yeah, early in my career. And he was another St. Louis guy. He was based out of in Clayton. His name was Joe Hipskin. And then I moved on with Rocky about mid-career.
And Rocky's got the great place right across from Forest Park. I said, I want to shoot a reality show. When he's having his pool parties, I said, you could be like Entourage here in St. Louis, living the life. Maybe he's in San Diego. And it's amazing. So Rocky was based here before Marshall got traded here, even though they were very close. Jim Steiner, of course, here. Tom Condon. And a lot of them at one point had no connection to St. Louis other than it was a hub for TWA. It was a great spot to be because you could go East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah.
And then they got stuck here once the TWA left and the airport sort of downsized. But well, I could tell some. I didn't know this. We're going to tell some Rocky stories off air.
How about if you had the task on Sunday at 5:30 of dealing with Aaron Donald? Have you ever seen anything like him?
No. And I mean, he's unbelievable to watch. And I will say that about just the Rams defense in general. They are fun to watch. Donald is one guy I never had the opportunity to play against. But guys that I played with who I know their skill level and how good they are and other players that they've done really well against, they have said that Donald is one of the best.
Did you see Sue? Did you have collisions with Sue?
Yeah. So when Sue was in Detroit, I played against him. He was tough. I mean, he's one of the tougher, more physical guys on there. I mean, obviously, I think we all see that. So that combination up front.
And on the O-line, we know guys chatter back and forth, but I get the sense of the Patriots. I mean, especially when they score a touchdown, there's no spiking or dancing. If you were a player on the Patriots and you talked a lot of trash on the field, was that okay? Or was that something, too, that just wasn't part of the – because it's such a big part of the NFL now, but I feel like with New England, they're very – not corporate, but they don't just don't get involved in that stuff.
Yeah, and, I mean, I wouldn't say it's anything that's you know, coached to us or told to us. Like, nobody says don't play this way because we're all emotional out there and we're all going to – our emotions are going to come into the game. I think it just goes to the type of – player that the Patriots go after. It's just not those kind of guys that are really out there running their mouths.
Would you say in general, though, offensive linemen seem to be a bit more thoughtful, reflective? I mean, you never see like an offensive lineman with the histrionics of a defensive end or a wide receiver, anything like that. Like the people I know, like the Andy McCollums, the Adam Timmermans, the Orlando Paces, yourself, Grant Williams, even go back further, Dan Dierdorf. Why do you think that's the case?
I mean, it's the position itself looks like a very, you know, rough and tough, but it's a very intelligent position. I mean, what we need to know defensive-wise or blocking schemes is it requires a lot of intelligence. And Dante Scarnecchia, who I've talked about already, he loved certain types of guys, certain intelligence. He always went after Boston College centers. He loved to have a Boston College center because those guys were really smart. I think that's just what the position requires.
Now, had Dan Connolly scored a touchdown on that kickoff return against the Green Bay Packers, maybe there would have been a different celebration there. That would have – you had to have been thinking, oh, my God, I might be scoring a touchdown here.
To be honest with you, I actually thought that I was scoring a touchdown.
And tell people that haven't seen the footage, we like to roll it out. It's hard to find good footage of offensive linemen. So when something like that happens, we roll that tape every time we talk to you.
Yeah, play it as much as you want.
Tell people what happened, how it transpired.
Yeah, so I think we were going into the end of the half, and Green Bay, I think, was winning at the time. And I'm on kickoff return, mainly just to be a blocker out there. And they didn't want to give our returner the opportunity to return the ball. So they squibbed it. Here I pick it up. They expect this guy's just going to fall on it. Hopefully bobble it, and we can get the ball back. This, I think, was my fourth return of the year, and I picked it up. I ran about 10 yards expecting to just run into somebody and fall. Well, two guys on the Packers ran into each other, and a big hole opened up, so I just reacted and just kept going.
And if I remember correctly, you had 5.140 speed, correct?
At the combine?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think I was a little bit faster on that play. I think my 4.8 speed.
A little adrenaline kicking
That's
in.
Great. Yeah.
And then now people can find you. You're training every day. You're at D1 Academy. Tell them where they can find you.
What a facility.
Yeah, so we're located at the intersection of Manchester Road and Weidman out in Baldwin. And we specialize in sports-style training starting at ages 7 and up. We have a scholastic program and an adult program. And we've been open for about 7 or 8 months, and we're just continuing to grow.
So what you're doing is, regular adults go in there for working out, but if a kid wanted to, like, improve his quickness, his cone drills, 40 speed, you do some of that stuff specifically, correct?
Yeah, so our program in general is kind of non-sport specific. We're training those measurables, get faster, get stronger, those kind of things. We also can do some sports-specific stuff. We've got a group of coaches that all of them are exercise science educated. Most of them are college athletes or beyond, and they can specialize in those specific areas.
We have a lot of parents that are going to listen are listening right now. So how do they get in touch with you? Where is it specifically?
Our website is D1 Sports Training.
D1 Sports Training.
Yeah.
Perfect.
STL West is our location. Check out our Instagram, Facebook page, or call our location and speak to our GM, Jeremy Kerber.
Perfect. Thanks so much for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Frank. Thank you, Martin.
Dan Connolly, former Super Bowl champion with the Patriots. We'll take a short time out. We'll talk to another Super Bowl champion, Ricky Prohl, when we come back.